I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, remembering Betty Page. Betty Page wasn't just another 1950s pinup queen. She was a pop culture icon. We'll talk about why in just a few minutes. But first, with America in the midst of a recession, economic news is changing by the minute. An historic interest rate cut, record-setting jobless claims, companies considered symbols of American strength in danger of bankruptcy. Yet some economic stories seem to persist through countless cycles of boom and bust, and one of them is the wage gap between men and women. Today, a woman can expect to earn 78 cents for every dollar a man makes, and the gap is even more pronounced for women of color. A recent report by the Philadelphia area nonprofit group Women's Way found that in the region, Latinas working full-time earn 45% of what white men earn. The rate for black women is 56%, and Asian women earn 70% of what white men earn. Joining us to talk about this is Melissa Weiler-Gerber. She's the executive director of Women's Way. That's the group that commissioned the wage study. Also with us is Valerie Ralston-Wilson. She's a senior resident scholar with the National Urban League Policy Institute. Welcome to you both. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I want to start with the obvious question. Why does this gap persist? And Melissa Weiler-Gerber, if you'd start, what does the report indicate about why this wage gap persists?
Well, I think there are certainly complex reasons that go into this. And one of the things that we always want to pay attention to is the concentration of women in different occupations. Women remain concentrated in occupations that tend to pay less than occupations that men are concentrated in. And so that certainly takes a toll on women's overall earnings. In addition, women pay what we consider a care penalty for time that they spend disproportionately either out of the workforce or having to scale back their work responsibilities because of caregiving responsibilities that still fall predominantly on women. Beyond that, I would say there still is workplace discrimination. And the way we know that is that when men move into a traditionally female-dominated occupation, like nursing, like teaching, when you look at their salaries, those salaries tend to be higher than women's. And so we feel that at some level, there is still some discrimination at play.
And Dr. Valerie Ralston-Wilson, the report also makes this interesting finding that the wage gap still persists within each ethnic group, but it's much, much smaller. For example, black women working full-time earn 92% of what black men earn, but only 56% of what white men earn, that Latina earnings, 85% of what Latino men earn, but only 45% of what white men earn, and Asian women, 80% of what Asian men earn, but still less than what white men earn. That's a very interesting. Why is that? What do you say to that?
Well, I think what that statistic highlights is the fact that in addition to these gender gaps in wages, there's also racial gaps. Generally, within a race, black women, black men tend to be similarly situated. But then when we look at across races, we still have a racial discrimination gap.
What do you think about what Melissa was talking about, that the fact that there are sort of multiple factors? I mean, some of it's the childcare gap, that women tend to have to make accommodations professionally to accommodate child rearing that mm-hmm. men typically don't make or don't make to the same degree, and that has a profound impact on wages.
I think that's certainly true, and particularly among African-American women, where since the 1980s, more than 40% of African-American households are headed by women. So not only do you have the case where women, you know, may choose voluntarily to take time out of work to care for children, but in many cases when you're the only parent, that's really not a choice. You have to take time out, or you have to be the one to leave work to go attend to a child who may be sick or may have issues at school or what have you.
Melissa, what about the argument that this is really a matter of life choices and that women want to perhaps prioritize child rearing, and if there's a pay impact to that, well, that's what happened. If they choose to go into, say, caregiving professions like nursing or teaching that tend to pay less, then that's what they should do. What do you say to that?
Right. Well, I think it would be simple if that were the case. But we know that for the vast majority of families in our country, it takes two incomes to make ends meet. And it's really critical that that woman earns everything that she's entitled to earn. So I think, you know, it's hard to pin it down that way.
There are really two competing visions of how we should address this balance between taking care of children well and giving people free choice, as it were. There's the model that we see more often in Western Europe, particularly in the Scandinavian countries and France, where there are tremendous social supports for new parents, but there's also a very high tax burden that goes along with that. In this country, the pressure is to keep taxes low because the more of your own money you can keep, the more choices you have about what you do with it. And if what you choose to do with it is to work more, that's your business. If you choose, what you choose to do is to have perhaps one person at home or to work less, then that's your business. But the philosophical divide is over whether you keep taxes low so that presumably people can have more choices, or you raise taxes so that you can offer more benefits. So do you understand what I'm asking? What is your take on that?
I do. Well, I think the flaw is that free choice still doesn't exist in most cases for the people who are at the lowest income levels. And so I think at some point you really do have to summon up the political will to make some policy choices. I think that although as a nation, it has unfortunately, we've come to a point where even talking about taxes gets you in trouble, I think really a re-education about the fact that taxes are what pay for the supports that hold us together as a nation and as a community. And if we can very explicitly identify to people that a tax increase in a particular year would go to pay for a particular program that would help families to thrive, that people are much more receptive.
Valerie, what do you say to that?
I agree with everything Melissa just said. And specifically, I'd like to talk about the fact that people's incomes are different. We're talking about a wage gap today. We're talking about an earnings gap. So, you know, even if we allow people to have more of their own money, those at the lower end of the wage distribution have less of that money to distribute. So I think it requires more than just saying, well, let's, you know, let everyone have their money and do what they will with it. Because, you know, quite frankly, everyone, you know, isn't in the same economic position in this country.
Melissa, I want to hear from you. But talking about this whole question of education, one of the interesting things that your report says is that education isn't as remunerative for women as it is for men. That the report says that, for example, the typical woman with a bachelor's degree earns less than a man with some college and no degree, and that women with bachelor's or graduate and professional degrees earn less on average than men with solely a bachelor's degree, which I think is interesting. Speaks to what you're saying.
Absolutely. I think this is one of those surprising statistics that makes you kind of look at it twice. And this is, we should be really clear that education helps everyone's wages rise. So we are not saying that it doesn't pay to get education. It just pays for men more. One of the other things we really focus on is working with schools, with guidance counselors, with unions, with folks who may have some kind of influence over the kinds of career choices that girls think about for themselves, or creating a supportive environment for a woman to go into a non-traditional kind of position so that women can begin expanding their range of career options, look at where the highest paying jobs are that can really support their families over the long term, and not be pigeonholed into something that has traditionally been a female job.
Valerie, a final thought. Many people, in thinking about the upcoming inauguration, have said, I never thought I'd see an African-American elected president in my lifetime. And many people are also looking forward to perhaps seeing a woman in that role and sometime in the future. As a person who's been studying this issue for quite a long time, do you envision a time when we won't be having a conversation about the gap in earnings between men and women?
Honestly, I'll have to say I think it's difficult for me to envision a time when we won't be having this discussion, simply because I think to move away from the status quo in terms of gaps and discrepancies in earnings would require a collective will of the people to say, you know, this isn't right. We don't want this to happen anymore. We're not going to tolerate this anymore. Then I think it's very difficult to imagine a time when we won't have that situation.
Melissa, what about you? Your organization has been studying this issue for quite some time. You've been issuing these reports for quite some time. And one of the other findings of the report is that even though the gap has narrowed in some ways, it hasn't narrowed nearly as much as other disparities. Do you envision a time in your lifetime, our lifetime, when we won't be having this conversation?
Well, I might live a good long life, I hope, but I think we'll still be talking about this for some time just because the pace of progress has really come to almost a plateau over the last 10 to 15 years. You saw a significant improvement in the wage gap in the 70s, 80s, 90s when we had a very active women's movement, when we were really engaging in some new legislative techniques to battle discrimination. Since that time, there's really been a leveling off, and unless we can really generate the kind of major movement to create the kind of political will that Valerie was talking about and that we certainly saw and identified during the last election cycle, I think the movement will continue to be at a snail's pace.
Melissa Weiler-Gerber is the executive director of A Women's Way. She joined us from Philadelphia. Dr. Valerie Ralston-Wilson is a senior resident scholar with the National Urban League Policy Institute. She joined us here at our NPR studios in Washington. We will have links to both reports that these ladies were involved in on our website, npr.org/tellmemore. I thank you both.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
Remember, at Tell Me More, the conversation never ends, and we'd like to ask you one of the questions we asked our guest, which is the gender wage gap a problem to be solved or a circumstance to be observed? Is the pay gap, in your view, mainly a matter of bias against women or personal choices by women and men? To tell us more and to compare notes with other listeners, go to our website, the Tell Me More page at npr.org. You can also call our comment line at 202-842-3522. Again, that's 202-842-3522. And please remember to tell us your name and where you're from.